This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, which is so important, by the way, because it is, you're going to get something pre-owned. You're like, hey, guys, I want to make sure it's gone over with a fine-tooth comb. They do that. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Greg Pickle joins us from on3.com. Greg, always a pleasure.
Steve, good to be with you. Happy bye week to you.
Yes, happy bye week. Yes, we're at the bye week. There are certain moments where teams in any sport show you something. What did Penn State show you on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think we could probably do the entire segment on just that question alone, Steve. You saw, as well as I did and everybody else watching, that Penn State answered the bell time and time again in that game. And I think if you went back and looked at my season predictions or any, various fan media season predictions, whatever it might be, across the internet and on social media, this game was a huge question mark for a lot of people who follow this program, either because they thought Penn State would struggle going on the road in a quote-unquote big game environment, or they thought USC might just overwhelm this team, or maybe that the offense wouldn't have enough firepower to win. I mean, I think there's any number of reasons, at least back in August, that a lot of people question this game as one, whether Penn State would win this game or not. And Penn State answered all the questions to its credit. Again, it was resilient over and over again. It didn't let interceptions impact the way the offense performed. We just talked to Andy Kolodnicki a few minutes ago. Tom Allen was available today as well. And Kolodnicki said that the touchdown pass Drew Aller threw to Nick Singleton to tie the game late in the fourth quarter is the same one that he threw an interception on earlier in the game. And the fact that Penn State went back to him, that he was not rattled, that Andy Kolodnicki wasn't rattled, I'm not sure if that's something we see a year ago. But we've seen it all season long, and certainly this game and that play was another indication of Drew Aller's growth and the changes in this offense as well. So I think that, again, no matter what you want to talk about, special teams with Ryan Barker, you question whether or not Penn State had a kicker that could perform when it mattered most. He was 4-for-4, including a game-winning overtime kick. And that USC kicker was darn good, too. He did not come through when the Trojans needed him to in overtime. Ryan Barker did. And now you feel really good about that portion of the special team. So you look at that. Obviously, defensively, Penn State buckled down after those three straight scoring drives in the first half to really take over yet again in the third quarter in the second half, which is what it's done all season. And I think to a man, from the coaching staff to the players and everybody in between, as James Franklin said after the game Saturday in Los Angeles, they want to be a four-quarter team, and it's great to be a second-half team, but they want to be more complete than that. So they're still working toward that, but again, they showed that if that's the way they have to win, that's the way they're going to win. And again, I'm just not sure coming into the season that you would have believed it necessarily until you saw it with your own eyes. Now that we did, you know exactly what you're getting with this team, and certainly there's ways for it to improve and give a better version of itself, but it's been so far so good throughout the 6-0 start.
Tyler Warren's performance in a lot of ways speaks for itself, but what has been your perspective in watching the variety of ways that Andy comes up with to get him in a position to be a part of the offense?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. You can tell listening to Andy Kolodnicki how much he enjoys the process him and the staff go through, finding creative ways to build off of things they have shown opponents previously and give it to them in a different and unique way. Down the road, whether it was a couple months ago, a couple weeks ago, what have you. So, yeah, Tyler Warren, certainly, Cole and Nicky just get done talking about it. When you combine his football IQ, his football smarts, and his football savviness with all of the talent he has as a 6'6", 261-pound, big, athletic tight end who can move and who has a quarterback background, and also, as you said after the game last week, an offensive line background going back to when he first started playing football, the options and opportunities for Penn State to use him are endless. And then obviously we've all seen that. He's throwing the ball. He's catching the ball. He's running the ball. He's a wildcat quarterback. His blocking, I think, is the one thing we don't talk about enough. He's tremendous in that aspect as well, certainly. Just like any lineman or any blocker, the less you talk about them doing those things, typically the better off you are. But he's certainly thriving in that area as well. The 17 catches and the snap and score and things like that, of course, draw the headlines and are the fun things to talk about. But the things he does when he's not doing those fun things and exciting things and what draws headlines and SportsCenter top 10 plays and things like that, I think is really the biggest and best part of his game. So, yeah, it's been fascinating to watch how the staff has used him. And to his credit, it's been fascinating to see how well he can handle so many different tasks. And never seem like he's bothered. It never seem like one is better than the other, or that he can do X better than he can do Y. He's doing all of it at a high level, and his Penn State offense is certainly better for it.
Also, somebody that came to Penn State with expectations is Julian Fleming. People have been waiting for him to make some big plays. In fact, against UCLA, when he got stopped at the 2-inch line, the crowd was ready to erupt because they're rooting for him so much. On the 2 fourth-down plays, what did Andy and others say about those plays, especially the way Fleming attacked the ball and got it?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think this was not said by Andy Kolodnicki really, or anyone within the program, but just the idea stands, like we talked about a minute ago with Drew Aller. You know, they were comfortable and confident to go back to Drew with a play that he previously made a mistake on and ended up with a touchdown, just like they were confident and willing to go back to having Julian Fleming on the field when they needed the key fourth down conversion, not once but twice, and he delivered. And I think that, you know, again, to your point, there's been a lot of talk about his potential and what he could bring to this offense and so on and so forth. And, you know, some fans were certainly frustrated, I think, that it maybe wasn't showing up in ways that they expected it to or wanted it to. But sometimes you just have to wait for the good things to happen. And with Penn State, it was worth the wait because certainly a lot of reasons Penn State came back and won that game. But when you look at the list of the biggest plays in terms of down the stretch, certainly those are at the top of the list. So it was a really good moment for him. And I think a really good game just in general for the receivers. You know, you and I have talked, everyone's talked about this group and the questions they had coming into the season and what it would do, once the games had started. And it had some good moments, of course, throughout the course of the first five games. But to me, this was the first time, for four quarters that, you know, even with the drops in the first half and things like that, the offensive pass interference specifically for Fleming, those guys made big plays in the second half when Penn State needed them. It was Trey Wallace. It was Amari Evans. It was Liam Clifford. And, of course, it was Julian Fleming. So I just think overall this was a step forward game for these guys. And if they keep playing that way, they're going to like the results. And so are Penn State and its fans moving forward.
On defense, not talked as much because of Penn State's a fun offense to watch. I mean, you know. But on defense, Tom Allen, from the time he came in, had a way he wanted to play, Greg. And he went through the winter, planned it, used it in the spring, all set. Okay, off-season, same thing. Preseason, all set, and then five quarters in, he has to change because KJ Winston isn't there anymore, and they have to change how they use Jalen Reed. Has he been given enough credit for some of the adjustments he's had to make on the fly because they, at this moment, they can't play the same way he planned for 9 months?
No, he's not. There's no question about that. That's one of the things we talked about this week over at BlueWayIllustrated.com is just the fact that I don't think Tom Allen nor his staff nor his defense are getting enough credit for what they're doing and how they're playing without one of the best defensive players in the country. I mean, if you go back and look before the season started, you're talking about a guy who was in a lot of NFL draft big boards, certainly in a lot of the All-American and All-Big Ten conversations. And as you said, they lost in five quarters into the season, and it completely changed the way Tom Allen wanted to do things with Jalen Reed playing that lion position and Zachy Wheatley and Kevin Winston Jr. really handling things on the back end for the most part. And so they had to adjust on the fly, and it's worked pretty well. I mean, I know the slow starts on both sides of the ball are a talking point, and with good reason, but you can't doubt or question what these guys are doing in the second half of games. And can they be better in the first half? Yes, but they are really playing well and maybe not getting the credit they deserve because it's not as, I think the word I would use maybe is flashy or splashy. I think either one works, that it was the last 2 years under Manny Diaz, but the results and the numbers outside of maybe sack and turnover production are pretty much the same. You know, Pro Football Focus just put out that Danai Dennis-Sutton leads all defenders and quarterback hits this season. I think most people would probably be surprised by that, just considering some of the discourse I see about the pass rush this and pass rush that. A lot of it's in a negative sense, but those guys have been really good. Dane Durant's been really good. Obviously, Kobe King's leading the defense from the middle. And then, you know, to wrap it all up, like you said, with the safeties, I mean, you know, they're bringing Lane along, and it's going to take time, but, you know, they weren't expecting this, and at least not at the level it is now, of course, and now he has to be moved along quickly, and they're moving guys into that lion position. Zion Tracy, I thought, had an extremely underrated game at USC. Cam Miller playing that position as well when they can't get Reed down into it. So, no, I don't think he's getting enough credit for it, and it's a big reason why Penn State is 6-0. You know, again, you can pick at some things, of course, and Penn State's going to do that itself with the self-scouting during the bye week. But, I mean, to lose a guy like that, you know, if you lose a guy like that on offense, I think for whatever reason, I think it'd be talked about a whole heck of a lot more, but defensively it's really not. And he's, you know, it's about as impactful of a player as his team could have lost. And for the most part, they've overcome it very well.
When this is, of course, the bye week, to you, your opinion, how important could the bye week maybe be for a DeJuan Lane or maybe even somebody else where now they might get a few more reps in the second half of the season because of the bye week?
Yeah, it is all about reps for those young guys, right? It's Lane on defense. It's any number of young guys on defense, Tamir Robinson and Dakari Nelson at linebacker. On offense, it's Luke Reynolds. It's, you know, any of the other guys Penn State thinks could help it. Cooper Cousins obviously falls into that category. We could go probably a little bit further down the list, but there's no doubt that when you're getting those veteran guys some rest, you are upping the reps for some guys that maybe you've used in games on special teams and you've got their feet wet on offense and defense, but now you have this, you know, pretty much perfectly timed midseason bye week to take what they've done, critique it, and, you know, praise the things that are good and accentuate those, but also fix whatever you need to so that those guys can be a bigger part of the offense and defense in times of the game when it matters, not at the end of blowouts. Moving forward. So there's no question this is a big week, not just for rest and recovery for the guys who need it, but for those young guys, it's all about reps, and more reps to get ready for the second half.
There has been a perception about Drew Aller during his career, now a year and a half in as a starter. Do you feel in any way, shape, or form he changed some of that perception on Saturday?
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I think with those who follow Penn State closely, like listeners here, that perception has been changing already with what he's done through the first 5 weeks. But there is no question that nationally, the discourse around him and the way he's talked about and viewed by media members, by fans, you know, what have you, had changed after that game without question. I mean, if you only watch Penn State when they're in a big, you know, quote unquote, big game like this one, or if you, you know, don't follow closely but tune in for the best games of the week, whatever it might be, or maybe just tuned in for the final, you know, fourth quarter in overtime because you heard the game was good. If that's how you typically consume and follow Penn State, you know, you remember a Drew Aller that was very different in those kind of situations last year from what people saw on Saturday at USC. So, yeah, I think the entire conversation around him has changed. And, look, it's completely right and fair to give credit for that to Andy Kolinicki and to Danny O'Brien, but don't forget to give Drew Howard a lot of credit in that conversation, too. It's not just what those two have brought in and done for him. It's how he's taken that coaching and that advice and so on and so forth and become a better player. He evolved as a player from year one to the halfway point of his second season as a starter. It's clear he's more assertive. He's more confident. He is a director of this offense. He's aggressive in this offense. And, you know, again, scheme comes plays a big part. I think coaching plays a big part of it. But his drive to be better and his drive to improve is what fueled this, not just this big game, but his start to the season. And it's all paid off in a very big way for him. So, yeah, certainly I think, like I said, locally, regionally, nationally, the conversation is different after Saturday, and it was probably a little bit different locally and maybe even regionally before. But now when you're talking big picture across the country, it's changed as well.
I do have to slip in a little bit about wrestling at this point with you because you do such a great job. I mean, Jeff Byers is the best wrestling announcer in America by far, but you're one of the preeminent guys who writes about the sport. So let me just a couple things. How do you like the way the schedule lays out and the fact that there are two Jordan centers and not one? Because Cale's always really resisted too.
Yeah, so let me take you into just a different direction quick, Steve, because we do have some news developing on that front today. Greg Kirkfleet's no longer going to wrestle in the NWCA All-Star Classic. Iowa State actually announced just about an hour ago that one of its wrestlers, Younger Pastita, is going to wrestle with a heavyweight match against Ohio State, Nick Feldman. Don't have any info on that yet. Flo hasn't said anything. Penn State, of course, hasn't either. But five Nittany Lions still are set to compete in that event next month at Rec Hall. Kirkfleet's out for whatever reason, so we'll see what we learn on that front, but something to watch for sure. And then as for the schedule, yeah, we're a month away from Drexel coming to town one day after that NWCA All-Star Classic, and I think it's a really intriguing schedule. I love the fact that they're taking Iowa and Michigan to the BJC like they did a couple years ago. I think it's great for the fans. I think it's great for the sport. And, you know, Cale Sanderson, I think it was 2 years ago, talked about the fact that, you know, it certainly seemed like he was a little bit more open to that idea maybe than in past years. So not a huge surprise there. But, yeah, I like the schedule. I like that they're going to the collegiate wrestling duels in Nashville in December. I think that's going to create great competition and a great college wrestling environment. I think the home schedule is pretty fun. The Big Ten's part of it, you know, outside of Iowa and Michigan, maybe not as enticing to a lot of fans, but you have Wyoming coming to the to Rec Hall, which is a really interesting matchup, a school that Penn State has not faced before. They go on the road back to the PTL Center to face Lehigh in Allentown. That'll be a sold-out raucous event. So I think the schedule sets up a lot of, you know, in good ways for the fans and in good ways for the program to get to that point that Cale Sanderson always talks about, which is being ramped up for the postseason and ready to go for Big Tens and Nationals.
All right, so now let's get to what's a tough question. Penn State and all the other Big Ten schools are not involved in this question, but you and I both know the finances in intercollegiate athletics are going to dramatically change in 9 months. As soon as April 7th comes and goes and the deal is approved on the House settlement, people are going to have to come up with money. Now, it's not going to affect the Big Ten at all, but is there concern in the wrestling ranks that some people may take a long, hard look, not just at wrestling, but at other programs, because there may be some people out there that feel like they need to save money?
Yeah, I don't know. It would be interesting. I don't know if Penn State necessarily will find itself in that boat, but are
No.
The
Penn State
going
won't.
To? Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You know, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, as I said, Penn State won't, and no Big Ten group will. But outside of those 14 schools, is there some concern?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, Campbell is one school that there's already talk about maybe eliminating some sports, wrestling, I think, being one of them, baseball possibly being another, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just one school that seems, for whatever reason, those potential plans have become public. But that's not the only school that's going to have those conversations. It'll just be really interesting to see how this plays out, you know, because there's a lot of schools that will find themselves in that position, and what do they want to prioritize? What do they want to try and put their money toward? And will a lot of them just go with football or basketball because those right. are sort of the quote-unquote big brand sports, or will some of them lean into the games they have, or the sports rather that they have, that are maybe not as big money makers but successful, and ones their alumni and donor base and things like that really cling to. So yeah, there's a lot of tough questions that have to be answered by a lot of programs around the country as this thing all unfolds, because ultimately at the end of the day, it's all about money, it's all about finances, and it's all about revenue, and schools will have to make tough decisions about these things because of that.
Yeah, because Penn State especially and the Big Ten, they will do nothing. It'll be status quo there because everybody loves it, and it's awesome at all those schools. It's just some of them that are like in the middle to the smaller ones may have to make some decisions. That's the only reason I bring it up. So, all right, Greg, always a pleasure. I don't care what topic it is. You're terrific. Thanks so much.
All right, you too, Steve. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Greg Pickle, on3.com. I hope everybody sees my point here. This is not a Penn State question. It's not a Big Ten question. But there are a lot of programs across the country. If you have added the sport of wrestling recently, question is now, can you afford to do this because of the new economic reality? We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
October is Truck Month at Asombury Motors, with over 100 new trucks to choose from.
Sun, sun, ride with the sun, Asombury Motors.
SMC has 12 of the hard-to-find Ford Maverick trucks, priced as low as $27,890, and they get up to 42 miles per gallon. Pick from over 40 of the number one selling truck in the world, the Ford F-150. And Asombury Motors has them slashed up to $12,416. And 4x4 Super Cruise are priced from just $46,874. Asombury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly owned by the Mertz family for over a century. Hurry, sale ends Halloween Eve, October 31st.